Yeah, right. I'm guessing that you're pretty happy about the president's announcement of the plan, huh?
Yes, we feel like it's been years in the making, and we're feeling enthused about it.
So, what do you think its chances are of becoming a reality?
I think we're early in the process. I think he outlined his vision and his plan yesterday and really tried to make the case for why improving infrastructure is going to create jobs, improve quality of life for Americans, like jumpstart our economic recovery. But now, the ball is in Congress's court to have those debates, have those discussions, get some legislation together to kind of fulfill that plan. So I think he sent a strong signal that this is his next top priority. And this is, again, as we talked about, I think just been such an area of bipartisan agreement that I think it'll come together.
My question is not necessarily a question, and it is a moot point at this point, but 4 years ago with the other administration, they kept talking about an infrastructure plan. There was going to be a big infrastructure project, and bonds were going to be sold. This was going to be a big thing, and nothing ever happened. How much has that cost us in terms of what we need to do now? As a result of inaction over the last 4 years, the problem hasn't gotten any better.
Right, that's a great question. And I think, we just came out since we last talked, we've had our infrastructure report card be revealed on March 3rd. So there are actually a lot due to city and state kind of taking the lead absent of federal action. There's a little bit of incremental progress, which surprised some people. Our overall grade across those 17 categories that include transportation and water and energy and ports. It edged up to a C minus. I'm a parent. I'm still not going to jump up and down about a C minus grade. There's a lot of work to do. And there's still 11 categories in the D's, but you did see cities and states take action to raise revenue. We've seen some good progress in Washington State and around the country with ballot measures, with funding increases. So I think cities and states are doing what they can to hold it together and make progress. But yes, we did have 4 years where there wasn't that bold transformational investment that was talked about.
Did you said a C minus? Is that a nationwide grade for roads, bridges, and infrastructure?
Yes, the nation got a C minus across 17 categories of infrastructure. And we actually added a category this time, stormwater, although that debuted at a disappointing D.
Well, anybody who knows about the flooding and the mismanagement of some of the stormwater systems in Washington State knows all about that because, as a matter of
Right.
fact, the Seattle City Council is just, I believe it's either the city or King County is appropriated about $100 million to fix a major stormwater plant, and which has had nothing but problems over the last few years. So, where is our transportation lacking most? I mean, a C minus, as you mentioned, is nothing really to crow about. But what needs the most help right now? What's in most need of repair?
That's a good question, and I think, one thing we like about the plan is that it's really a comprehensive, holistic approach. You need the system to all work well, but a couple of grades that I would point to. First, transit systems had the lowest grade, a D minus. That's near failing. And that's not really a testament to the job that transit agencies are doing, but really the maintenance backlog that they're facing. We have a lot of legacy transit systems, particularly in the Northeast, and they built out their systems decades ago and just haven't had the funding to do the needed maintenance. Even as transit balance initiatives are passing across the country. And then you've seen as these systems, get older and less reliable, it's kind of a vicious cycle because ridership declines, their revenue declines further, and then they can't make those service improvements. And then, of course, we had the pandemic. And I'm sure you all are well aware that, you know, transit ridership took a really drastic hit. In many cases, 90% of ridership down because people just weren't comfortable riding trains and buses, and we'll see how things progress over the coming year. But they were kicked while they were down. So there's a minus grade there.
I'm happy to say that in my area here in Central Washington, our local transit system has managed to have ridership of 65% of normal, which has come up to that point. And it's actually doing, I think, one of the best, I think they're saying it's one of the best retention of riders in the entire nation. So, and we've gone from a fare system to dropping the fares. So all the rides are free right now, and it might stay that way. But you were mentioning the legacy systems in the Northeast. One only needs to take a look at the New York City subway system, the MTA, and it is woeful. and that seems to be, as one who has written it, it needs a lot of help. So hopefully we'll how soon is there a timeline for this transportation plan? Do you think are we going to be seeing any dollars coming to this anytime soon, or is this going to be a long, drawn-out process?
Another good question. I think, you know, everybody's got their crystal ball out right now, but it does seem, again, we're early in the process, and it's now, you know, up to Congress to come up with that legislation. We not only are waiting for an infrastructure package to come together, but we've also got the surface transportation reauthorization, the deadline's up at the end of September, and that just provides routine regular funding for our roads, bridges, and transit systems, and that really is so needed by state DOTs and local agencies to have certainty and predictability for their funding. So I think, you know, it will not be overnight. I think we're talking about, you know, a process throughout the summer. And but again, feeling like President Biden and the administration sent a strong signal that this is their priority as we pivot to economic recovery and get vaccines out. So I think it'll get done, but it will not be overnight. The good thing is that, you know, state DOTs and water utilities and all these infrastructure agencies have plans in place and are ready to go. So when that legislation is passed, you know, projects will get underway. Some of them will be things that you're used to seeing, like, you know, pavement repair and maintenance, and others are going to be kind of bigger. I've heard them called shovel-worthy projects. So, you know, think long-term plans to make our infrastructure more climate resilient and using the best innovative technologies. So the plans are in place, the projects are ready to go, and we've got to get this legislation going.
Ms. Feenstra, you can sell this easily to people in the transportation industry, in the construction industry, in the engineering industry. Sell it to the taxpayer, because they're going to be eventually, essentially, footing the bill on this. Sell it to the taxpayer. Why? How do you get them to support it? What do you tell them?
Sure, absolutely. And I think sometimes, you know, people see sticker shock when they look at all of the different proposals out there on how we're going to pay for some of these investments. But what I like to point out, and what some people don't realize, is that, you know, the taxpayer is already paying. We've got this hidden tax American families are paying because we've kicked the can down the road when it comes to federal investment. And what I mean by that is, you know, every time you hit a pothole or the state DOT has to close a bridge to trucks because it just can't handle those heavy loads, every time your power goes out, and we saw a really stark reminder of that in Texas, that costs us money. And we've actually been able to quantify that our kind of gradually deteriorating infrastructure costs the average American household $3,300 a year in lost disposable income, as we're just not optimizing, you know, this foundation of our country when our airports are overcrowded and our water mains break. That's just deficient and help causing us to lose productivity, and we can do better than that. So I think when you look at what we're already paying, the cost, the benefit outweighs the cost.
I was thinking about the transportation aspect, and you mentioned potholes and the price that we pay in terms of maintenance on our vehicles and things like that. It just came to me that one group that would probably be against this bill would be the auto repair shops, because if we fix the roads, maybe there won't be as many suspension problems in cars that repair shops have to fix and things like that. It might take business away from them. I kind of doubt that, but it just came to
you
mind that
maybe
they might. Yeah.
We actually looked at all of the different impacts on the industries, because we're not just talking about engineers and construction workers. We're talking about every sector of the economy, and we did find the one industry that might benefit from all of this deficient infrastructure is auto repair. So you're
really?
On to something. Yes.
we'll be looking for the other side from those guys, I suppose. So let's get some information out for people to find out more. I guess this is a matter for, if you will, pardon the well-worn phrase, call your congressman. How do we get people to do that, and where should they go?
Sure. Well, one way to find out more is just to go to our Infrastructure Report Card website. That's infrastructurereportcard.org. We actually have a number of maps where you can see, you know, what it looks like in your state, what infrastructure you have around you, how is it doing, how do you compare to other states, and then you can contact your member of Congress and tell them, yes, this should be the top priority for the federal government to address. So find out more there and let them know you think this is the priority moving forward.
Let me ask you one question. Was there any surprises to you in this report card? What surprised you most?
Good question. I think one piece of good news I didn't get to mention was just looking at the drinking water category. And of course, you know, what happened in Flint, Michigan was top of mind for a lot of folks across the country. And I think that was kind of a catalyst for a lot of action in the utility community. You saw drinking water utilities triple the speed with which they're replacing drinking water pipes. So they're tackling that inventory and trying to use technology and asset management to pinpoint leaks. There also is a great effort underway to just make sure drinking water utilities are resilient. So that was a piece of good news that might have gotten overlooked in all the C's and D's, is some strides happening when it comes to our drinking water systems.
There we go. Ms. Feenstra, Emily Feenstra, Managing Director of Government Relations at the American Society of Civil Engineers and a member of the Americans for Transportation Mobility Coalition. That's a mouthful, but I thank you for taking some time out and stopping by here. And come on back here and root for the Huskies, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.